World-renowned psychologist Brené Brown said that she discovered through her research that it is impossible to love someone more than we love ourselves. Throughout our lives, love is often romanticized as something that happens between two people. Whether it be a princess falling in love with Prince Charming or Darius reciting a blues for Nina in the classic movie Love Jones. Is it possible for someone to fall in love with themselves? Hi, I'm Hannah, and in this episode, I sit down with Nick to talk about my journey that led me to love me for me with no conditions or reservations. Welcome to Forbidden Fruit Podcast, where each episode will awaken you to the knowledge of a better you through insightful discussion and shared experience that instantaneously changed our lives. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, leave a review, as well as turn on your notifications so you'll know when a new episode will be available. Be sure to listen to the end so you don't miss on how I faced my insecurities to live a life full of joy and self-love.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. So I found you on Instagram, and I want to say the first time I saw you, you were talking about, I want to say it was like coffee or beans and something like that. And it was, you were just so hilarious. And then I followed you from that. So like, this is hilarious. And then it was just, I saw like your journey, you know, making fitness. So I think we spoke briefly, if you remember, about that time I did a physique competition. I just kind of threw that out and whatever and all that kind of stuff. And so I think you have an amazing story that I am looking forward to sharing with the audience.
That's so cool. I like it when people are interested in me because I don't feel like I'm particularly interesting. So it's cool to hear your perspective.
Well, let's definitely dive into it. So let's just talk about just who you are as a general introduction so we can get to know you, and then we'll go from there.
So who am I? That is a really interesting question. So in terms of work, I am a freelance personal trainer, but my main role, I'm a technician at a university. It's a very general job, so I don't really define that as, I don't define myself by my job. But I am big into fitness. I'm very much moving towards the health side of things. I'm quite passionate about becoming the healthiest version of me. But not just myself, I do want to translate that to others in a really non-patronizing way and a non-judgmental way. So I'm really trying to delve deep into that. I would definitely say I'm an outgoing person, but I am very introverted. And that was definitely because of the way I was raised and the way I am, just the way my childhood was formed. So although I'm quite outgoing on socials and in social settings as well, I am quite confident, but I'm quite introverted, and I live a life in my head most times. But yes, I think that's about me summed up.
I could definitely relate to that. I identify as a extroverted introvert. Like my social energy runs on battery power. So yeah. After a while, I was like, oh, I need to go chill, go to the crib.
Yeah, I'm tired. The snacks have run out. I'd like to go home now.
Right. So the one thing about your profile that stood out to me, and obviously, you know, we really haven't had much time to get to know each other, but you really seem genuinely happy, right? So for me, when I meet someone, something that stands out about them, if they are genuinely happy, that's something, a realization that I had a couple of years ago, as far as it's being a decision, really a commitment or a discipline to be happy. And you can really feel that. It's not like what you see on social media generally, where it's like they're kind of presenting like this life, this grandiose, you know, lifestyle, etc. But it's just like the joy kind of came off your profile for me. So let's talk a little bit about that. And have you always, you know, been this way, been happy in this way?
No, I was a really good liar, to be honest, on social media for quite a long time. I think it's because maybe it's subconscious with us that we believe that we need to put, you know, happiness on social media and energy and, you know, something that people want to see, whereas people just want to see your genuine self. Whether that's, you know, you're in the trenches of depression in one stage, you're a little bit unhappy. Now, don't get me wrong, that's not a green light to post, you know, all your troubles and your woes on socials. but I was most certainly living a lie, and it really wasn't to convince anybody else. It was more about convincing myself. If people clap for me and people think I'm happy, cool, that's the reality I live in. But yeah, I was living a lie for quite a while, to be fair.
Okay, so then let's talk about that transition, right? So how did you get from that to who you are now, like that overarching story, and then we'll dive into more of like specific moments.
I think with everything in life, you have to run by data. So things are proven by data. So I thought, okay, this isn't working. So what do I need to do to become happy? And I think I guess it's from relationships as well, trying to convince yourself that you're happy in the situation, you're not. And like I said, I live a life inside my head. What is the point in staying in a position where you're deeply unhappy? Now, weigh up the options. So if I'm in a job where I'm deeply unhappy, weigh up the options. I need to pay my bills. Okay, there's a rationale to stay. In a relationship, if you're married, of course, there's logistics. However, my job, will I be able to find a similar replacement? Yes. So let's move on. Relationships, I'm not married, we have no children, we're not tied, we don't have property. Let's think rationally and let's move on from this. So I think it is just really dissecting my situation and do I really need to be there? The answer is no.
Okay, so let's talk about that then. Like, describe like that moment, kind of put somebody in your shoes of like when you may have said to yourself, like, you know what, I'm really not happy. Like,
So it definitely didn't come in a relationship. I stayed in relationships till the very, very bitter end. I didn't have the balls, I should say, to leave, or the confidence to leave. But for me, I've really taken reins of my health. So the beginning, straight after my birthday last year in October, I was just sick, and I was consistently sick up until February this year. And there were all sorts of symptoms. I was tested. It wasn't the dreaded C word. But I had an X-ray. I had inflamed lungs. I completely lost my voice. And for someone who likes to talk a lot and does sing sometimes.
Right. I've seen your singing videos. They're dope.
Thank you so much. But then part of me being quite introverted, I didn't even know I couldn't talk until I went to a shop and said thank you to the cashier, and nothing came out.
Oh, wow.
And this was during Christmas, so I wasn't at work. There was a lot of downtime, so you know, people weren't really socializing as much. I wasn't going to the gym because I was sick, so I was just gaining weight. I was binge eating. I was just sluggish, miserable, ill, and just I thought enough is enough. I'm definitely not old, but I'm not 20 anymore. So I'm 39 in October. And I thought, I'm not walking into, you know, another chapter sick, miserable and grossly overweight. I didn't want to do it for myself anymore. So that was it. That was my moment.
So is that how you got into the fitness? Because I mean, a lot of the content that I've seen with you, it's like you're running, or you're, you know, working out or training and things of that nature. Is that what led to you getting into that passion?
Well, so this is another avenue I've taken this year as well. So I've chosen to be really honest with on my Instagram about what I'm eating, the days I'm training and not training, because my journey started when I was 15. So this was before the days where you could get cheap gym memberships and you could get pay as you go memberships. My mom grew up in a single parent household. She took an extra job out for just to pay for me to have a personal trainer, because I was 15 years old, overweight and really depressed. And my trainer at the time, it was in a very unique facility. There were no cardio machines. It was purely weight focused. And that's where my passion and knowledge came from. It was when I was 15, we were focused purely on the primary lifts, you know, squat, deadlift, lat pull down, shoulder press, those kind of lifts. So throughout the years, I've just been going on and off the gym, yo-yoing weight, just gaining. I mean, not just 10 pounds here and there, I'm talking 30 pounds, 40 pounds, just a mess. And then I think this year, it's the first time I felt completely in control of my binge eating. I'm not a slave to food anymore, and I'm enjoying just being fit. So this year I've started running, but that's been a personal challenge of mine. I never thought I could do it because I was overweight and my knees were quite bad. But it was just a confidence, being able to jiggle in public, you know, and just letting loose. Yeah, that's the one thing. I've just, oh my gosh, I'm jiggling. But then when you run in communities, there are people who are in their 70s, 80s, people who are 100 pounds greater in weight than you are, but they're still succeeding. And I thought, I just need a piece of that. I just want to be successful.
Okay. So then what do you think was causing you to feel depressed? Like, was it like, you know, outside social pressure? Is it just family life? Or was it just, you know, something that was always there that necessarily may have been overlooked?
I'm not too sure on the accuracy of this.
Okay.
But so my mom was quite depressed as I was growing up. And she, like I said, single parent household, two children. My mom has the potential to be so many things, but when you have a focus on feeding your children, my mom, she wasn't able to reach her potential. So I'm guessing this is from my rationale now. I'm guessing she had a lot of resentment. She was always tired, pretty much always miserable, but she was working multiple jobs. So she was quite isolated, and our family wasn't in the same city. And so most of our family is worldwide. So my mom didn't have that strong family network around her. So I think I did absorb some of that. And my remedy to how I was feeling was binge eating. So I'd binge, but then I'd gain weight, and that made me even more introverted. So it's definitely, I don't want to say it's in my DNA, because I don't want to create my own destiny here. But it's very much ingrained in me. So I fight it all the time. So if I'm in, say, an unhealthy relationship, it does trigger the depression in me, if you know what I mean. And sometimes if I spend too much time on my own, I do feel pretty isolated. But I try my best to stay on it and recognize it and break free. So,
right.
Yeah.
So I can definitely relate. So for me, it's like when I have those. So for me, what triggers, I guess, that depression or that sadness for me is a lack of productivity. If I feel like my life isn't progressing or going with the way that I think it is, whether it be rational or not, then I kind of get back into like my own head, and it's like, all right, you know. But to get out of that, it's literally sometimes a matter of just like, all right, stand up. Like, go outside, go to the gym, and then just like, it's literally almost like a mental battle. I was talking to somebody the other day, and it was like, to illustrate what it feels like, it's, imagine you have a kid that wants to go outside and play, like just dying to go outside and play. It's a beautiful day, the kids are outside playing and they see it, but then you got a parent that's saying like, all right, yo, you can't come outside for whatever reason. And then that, but then the how it feels is the kid and the parent are like the same person. And that for me is what that depression feels like. And it's such a mental battle. But to overcome that, I think it creates more mental toughness, right? Because a lot of people don't pull themselves out of it, you know, and for the worse, you know. So let's talk about then how you got to this level of self-love, because I think that's really what I want to talk to you about and want you to share with the audience. So describe to me self-love, and then how did you really like achieve that, or do you feel like you're at that place right now?
I definitely think I'm still a work in progress, but this has been the most love I've ever shown myself in my life. It's even on Saturday. So today's Saturday. So I love everything I eat. I eat well, but then on Saturdays I give myself complete freedom to eat anything I want, and it's anything. And there's no restrictions. And even as I look at what I've eaten today, although I can have anything I want, I've still been sensible, and it's not even me overthinking it. I still eat what I want, but it's that direct love. And it's just, I think, so the last relationship I was in, that taught me a lot about myself. And sometimes we can always blame other people, and, you know, and we can acknowledge that the other person had wrongdoings and stuff. But I just look at myself, I reflect back, and I just don't ever want to be that person. There was zero self-love, and I just find it really embarrassing. And I find it embarrassing because if this was my daughter and I was looking at her relationship, or she was telling me, I'd be heartbroken, because I'm not a terrible person, I'm not a bad person. So why would I not think I was deserving of the bare minimum of what I wanted? So going from that, and it was even ending the relationship. It should have ended way before it did, but I just didn't care, and I stayed in it. And that's another disappointment for me. So making sure I don't go back to that.
And so that relationship, so how long were you in that relationship?
It was just 8 months.
Okay. Mm. And then so I guess the rule of thumb when it comes to relationships, however long you've been together, you divide that by two, and that's how long you've been breaking up. So I guess at what point in the relationship did you realize that, you know, this is probably not it? Well, when you saw the first red flag, and then like how long did you ignore that before you then made the realization, like, all right, I gotta change something?
You know what, the 4 months, you hit the nail on it.
Yeah.
I think you know what it was, though? I was trying to convince myself that this was my person. I don't feel like I'm, oh my gosh, I'm getting old, blah blah blah, but the fact of the matter is I don't have children, I'm getting older, and I was convincing myself I was happy, and a part of me thought to myself, just put up and shut up, this is it, just go for it, maybe this is what God has destined for you, so just stay. And that's what I was telling myself. And I just thought, yeah. And I think that's what it was. I just ultimately didn't care. Yeah.
Right. It's tough when you kind of throw that God element into it, because it's kind of hard to argue with God. So if you attach that meaning to it, then it's like, what can you then say thereafter? Depending on, you know, how you are faith wise, if you are very religious or not.
But isn't that just the display of what we will convince ourselves? Because God doesn't bless mess, and it's not about, oh, if you're not happy, that's not God's will, because it's not about happiness. It's all, sometimes it's about ticking boxes. Do I want to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym or something? No, that's about getting stuff done. But it's not always the case when you're deeply, deeply, deeply unhappy in a relationship.
Right. I think the thing that stood up with to me about what you're saying is really the accountability part of it. So it's like, so when you take accountability and say, all right, you know, this was my fault, is not really to beat yourself up about it. It's to say, all right, I can actually do something about it. Because then if you can't do anything about it, then nothing will change. And then that's just then what your life is meant to be. And I don't think go ahead.
Because I'll tell you why I beat myself about things, because there's no mystery. There's very few mysteries around me and in my life and in my head. I knew this was going nowhere, and I knew there were so, and people say, oh, red flags. There was no red flags. The door was wide open. The sun was shining in my face. I knew exactly what was going on. I knew exactly what he was saying. There was no reason for me to be there. And that, in all fairness, that's the biggest thing I struggle with post-relationship, was that I just didn't even care about myself enough to walk away when the door was wide open.
Right. I get that. So then now, how do you view yourself now? So I think, because when you were talking about that relationship, you said you didn't really care. But then like now, like so as example, last year I was dating someone, and we were just having a conversation about something. And I really struggled with self-love for a long time, a very long time. And just through the, you know, years and years of work, I finally got to that point where I felt better about it. But then I had a moment this year while I was just talking to somebody, and she said something to me, I forgot what it was, and I just subconsciously, like, not even thinking about it, I said, like, I love who I am. And it was just like, oh damn, like, that's how you feel? it's like dating somebody or being in a relationship with somebody, and then they tell you that they love you for the first time, like, but it was me saying it to myself. It was like that kind of reaction, like, oh damn, like, where'd it come from? And so it was like, so have you had that? I mean, have you had that moment, or do you have that perspective of yourself now after everything that's led up to this point?
I think I have really, really, really good people around me. And you should never put your weight into someone else's opinion. But when I'm around the people that love me, and they reinforce that, and I think, wow, okay, maybe I am a cool person. So I run staff fitness classes, and before and after the class, we always have chats, and the way they breathe life into me, and you know, they literally make me feel like I'm the best personal trainer in the world and they can't live without me. And I just think, wow, but I'm not really doing much. And then it's not about the step ups and the bicep curls. It's really just about me. And I think, okay, maybe I am okay. So I guess it's when I'm on my own, I can convince myself of all sorts. But when I'm around people that I believe in and trust, I think, okay, they reinforce it.
Right. I get that. So I think when you're, so this is the dangers of isolating yourself is you don't really have that investment return, right? So it sounds like when you're out and doing your classes, you're putting out that energy, you're putting out like that, you know, that self-love and that expression, and then they give it back to you in like, this was the greatest class I've been in. And maybe what they're really saying is like, you made me feel this wonderful way, right?
Yeah.
But that's really just based off of like the seed that you sown in them. And then the fruit of that is the feeling that they have. And so when you isolate yourself, you don't really get that feedback. And then you kind of go in this 24-hour loop of propaganda going on in your mind about how
so
you're
true.
Like how you're terrible and nothing's bad. But how would you know if you're stuck in a house and you don't get to see how the world responds to you?
That's so true. That is so true. And that's what he said, that is the dangers of being isolated. And it's so easy for me. It's so easy. Because especially when I was sick, it was months. No gym, no interaction. The world stopped. And I just thought, this is just the worst place I've ever been. But I put myself there.
So outside of the gym, do you feel like people respond to you that way? Like whenever they're around you, like they feel like their joy, or maybe like if someone is down, they maybe perk up a little bit when they're around you. Do you feel that, or do you see that in your life?
I really do. And a part of my personality is, I guess I'm a bit of a jester. And that's also come from growing up as the fat kid. So in school, I had really elaborate hairstyles and big earrings, and it was a deflection tactic. And I think the jokes and the flamboyancy, that was a deflection tactic. But now I still do the same thing, but I do feel like that's more part of my personality. I'm not trying to throw you off.
I told you should get into comedy. You should give it one good shot, like write a 5-minute set and see how it goes, because it is. I think you're hilarious.
Listen, do you know what it is? I'll never ever forget. I don't see my mom too often because she lives across the city. But I was at her place one day and we were just chilling and we were just laughing and joking. And she said, "Oh, Hannah, you are funny." And I thought, yeah, I'm funny for real. My mom said.
Yeah, that's dope. So I think I had that experience for me. So my thing growing up was like I was the ugly kid. And so then growing up, I was all, for whatever reason, like all my friends were like the popular kids, which is crazy. and it shouldn't be that way. But from the outside looking in, it was like, man, like I want to be in the in crowd, but I was out. So you'll go out to a bar or a club or whatever, and you would always, you know, meet people. And I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm going to go home now. but so then my response to that was, all right, well, if you're going to be ugly, then you need to have a personality. You know what I mean? And so I worked on I've read almost every personality book. You know, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the charisma myth, the likability factor, and all of these things. I mean, like I'm talking about years and years of working on it. And then for whatever reason, I would say when I hit like 30, 33, then I became like attractive for whatever reason. I guess I just like the ugly duckling kind of became this, you know, attractive person. And then it was just like, all right, even now I struggle with the idea of being told I look attractive. It's like, okay, that's fine. Because I'm just so conditioned in my mind to then be a people person, to then compensate for that. And so I think kind of like you was like, I'm not funny. Well, I can't be funny, but my thing is like, I can be very charismatic, but that comes from a place of insecurity. But I'm at this point, I'm grateful for it because my job, I work in sales, I'm a recruiter. So that has been a hugely beneficial for me, especially in my organization. So had I grew up as this beautiful kid that got everything that I wanted, I probably would have been an asshole and would have had terrible people skills. And so now I look at it as something to be grateful for, as opposed to, you know, it's just something I had to deal with as a kid, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that.
Okay, so cool. So let me ask you this question then. So how, let's just say if you had a friend, because you kind of mentioned this with the hypothetical situation, if you had a daughter or a son, how would you then coach them out of feeling, you know, insignificant or not loving themselves or not valuing themselves? Like, what would you tell them to do to help get to where you are right now?
I think, so using my childhood as a reference point, I feel like it could be a little, I guess, unfair for me to be in a position where I would tell my child, because what if I had a child and I was in exactly the same position as my mom? Would I still have the cognitive function to even speak positivity into my child? So I'd really, really hope that I'd have a child with someone that at least was present. I think being present in your child's life is so important, because even if my mom was positive, a more positive spirit in the house, my dad's absence, maybe that subconsciously put something in my head. But I guess just incubating talents.
What do you mean by incubating talents?
Because my mom really incubated my brother and I, and my brother and my talents. She really did believe in us. She took us to ballet classes. She did her best. I don't know how she managed. But for me, it was the weight that held me back. I was just so shy and overweight and introverted. But I did love to perform. So I guess not so much telling my children. I would really hyper-focus on a balanced diet. Not giving my children a diet. I don't want them to be aware that they're going to be on a diet, but just putting that knowledge in their head about eating well, being fit. And I just think it maybe in a team sport as well, to subconsciously build confidence. So it's really difficult to say I would tell them sort of all this stuff, but what I'd be more proactive. I'd put them in a team sport. A bit more proactive with healthy eating. But just to say, my mom did cook from scratch. We never had fast food or anything like that. It's just that I snacked a lot because she was always working. So it just to fill the void of, you know, being lonely, I would just eat snacks. So my mom did cook from fresh and we did have healthy food.
Okay. I was the same way. So I would get home before my mom, because she was a teacher, and so then I had to learn how to cook on my own. So I definitely get that. So let's just say, would you say you would apply those same, so we talked about hypothetically as a child, would you say the same thing or recommend that to like an adult? Let's say if somebody was, you know, having a midlife crisis and they were kind of going down this dark road of depression and not really valuing themselves, like, would you give them that same advice, or would it be a little bit different?
I think So you have to meet people where they meet themselves. So you're in a midlife crisis, you know, you're losing control. So let's regain control of something. So you're super backed up on laundry. Let's tackle the laundry. Let's do one load and let's fold the rest. You're staying on top. Now that you can see the floor, there's less mess, it's less chaos. Let's keep it going. Okay, you're not eating well. What's your biggest issue? Oh, it's just I don't have time. Okay, no problem. Let's talk about meal prep. Let's blast a week's worth of food on a Sunday afternoon. Now you've got some time in the week. It's just doing one tiny thing. And it's been the case for myself. I've been so overwhelmed with everything and I've just shut down. Nothing's getting done. Whereas now, okay, let me just try and get in a run today. If a run is all I get done today, then I've had a good day. It's just one thing can just change the whole game.
Right. So what you're saying with like the laundry, like I completely like can relate to that. So for me, like I hate folding clothes. but it's like you can tell like my mood by like how my room looks or like how the yard looks. So recently, like I was struggling about a month ago, and you know I worked through that. And so now I'm actually working on like getting the yard together, like cleaning the house and just like not seeing the clutter. Then I guess, so it's easy to then associate what your actual life looks like. Like you walked in somebody's house and it's like trash and all this kind of stuff everywhere. Like that's, it's easy to say, all right, this is how I feel.
Like, 100%.
And I think that's important. Like to, like you said, like fold the laundry, clean the house, like, you know, take out the trash, etc. And then those things that I've realized is that begins to make me feel better by starting to then moving the visual representation of how I feel in that moment.
Is it, because that's what your mind looks like. It's absolute chaos. It could be something small as you haven't returned your packages, and you Amazon, you've got 7 days, and then it's getting to the sixth day, and then you're just panicking, and then you think, oh my gosh, I can't get to the post office because I've got to do this. Just leave out the house 15, 20 minutes earlier. Drop that package off. And it's something so simple. You drop the package off and you just feel a weight lifted. Right. I'm going to get my refund. I've delivered the package. And there's a huge sense of accomplishment when all you did was return a package. It's just, imagine that small thing translated to laundry, vacuuming, washing up, meal prep.
Right. And it's the crazy thing about it is like with the whole social media culture, like they promote, like, you got to have to be happy. You have to have these grandiose things. But like you mentioned before, if to kind of pull yourself out of these funks and be happy is like very small things you kind of take for granted.
Exactly, because you're looking at someone on social media who has got a whole a phenomenal well-being regimen, which is, you know, they wake up and they light candles and then they sing 7 mantras to the moon and this, and it's just that's just a lot. That's too much. When all you need to do is just take out the trash, you know, the recycling that's overfilled, take it out. Now you can see that portion of the kitchen. I can breathe. That's it. And you know, it's so funny. I do follow those types of Instagram pages. It is what it is. But I just think this is just too much. They've got coffee stations. Oh, I enjoy this roast on a Monday because right. I just have to think, my goodness me. My goodness.
It seems like you can't, yeah. So when I'm having those moments where I'm like, I really am enjoying myself, I'm happy, etc. Like I'm more likely to not bring my phone out, to stay present in the moment and enjoy it. I mean, I get taking a picture here and there so I can, like, you know, look back and, you know, have the memories, but like being present, I think, is huge.
Absolutely.
When it comes to that kind of stuff. Because I think that's when you're not in the moment, you tend to be ungrateful for the moment. Because in a grand perspective of things, like, a lot of people aren't happy, aren't healthy, aren't, you know, in a position where they can actually go out and have a coffee or something like that. And so it's just when you're present, like, that's all there is, as opposed to the comparison of your life to what could or couldn't be.
Exactly. Now, if you relate everything you've just said to a whole generation where it's now this and we can't blame generations and we can't blame social media. It's now culture. So with everything, you just have to break the mold. So there's been so many times when I've wanted to snap something and I've just forced myself not to. And that's not because, oh my gosh, I'm so much better than everyone else. No, because I really, really want to. But I think to myself, I will miss this if I take a picture of it.
Exactly. So,
and you know what? Maybe it means more to me than social, like my Instagram followers. Maybe they don't want to see this red rose that is just, you know, when people grow real roses in their gardens and I smell it and it smells, oh my God, it smells amazing. No one's going to smell it through my Instagram.
Right.
No one's going to appreciate it as much as I am because I'm there, I'm seeing it in the flesh. It's just going to be a picture of a flower to them.
Right.
You know, and I think that's with a lot of things.
So like when we first started the conversation, you mentioned, like, you know, your faith and things of that nature. So for me, like, to tie into what you're saying, like, I believe, and I'm not saying everyone should believe this, but I believe that the only thing that you can take with you when you die are the memories, right? Like, you can't take things, you can't take whatever, but I can remember, I'll believe that I remember when I'm going or wherever I think I'll go is, you know, that time, you know, on that Saturday when Hannah and I was trying to figure out the chat room and I was freaking out because of blah, blah, blah. Like those things I can remember for the rest of my life. And so I think it is important to really emphasize, like, being present and having those moments. So then when you do get down, you can then reference back to that moment, or it may be a situation where you pick up the phone and call somebody or shoot somebody a text and you kind of start going back and forth about that moment, and then that can then pull you out of that funk.
Exactly. Imagine going out with a friend for brunch and not taking a picture of it. Was the avocado and egg on toast still delicious? Of course it was. because but the time you took to take a picture of it, your egg was cold and it wasn't going to be as nice. And the thing is, like I said, this is our culture, and sometimes I do like looking at people's food pics, but when you're out and about, I just think it's so cool to just be there,
right?
And not worry about someone taking a picture of you with your gut hanging out. You forgot to suck it in because you weren't ready, you know?
Right. I saw a post on, I actually reposted this on my Instagram on a reel where it talked about the, I think it may have been Harvard or someone that did the longest research study ever. And it talked about like life and what the value of life, the biggest influence on health, longevity, happiness, etc. Like literally people are physically living longer because of these particular things. And they said the one element that has the most impact on the quality of our lives are the connections that we have. Like, so not necessarily like these superficial connections, but like having like a lifelong friend or meeting someone that you can really connect with, or like creating those like eureka moments, those memories with someone that'll last you, like those core memories that'll last with you forever. And that is what they've seen over time, the several years that they've been doing this study, that everyone that lives literally longer, like literally years and years longer, are those deep connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so true. I guess, like I said, we can't chastise this new generation, but I do remember a time before the internet, and some of my happiest memories were before the internet. And I think and some of the stories from you know, years ago would have been really funny for me to tell on Instagram when it didn't exist.
Right.
But if I can't tell the story and have you laughing, then it wasn't funny to you then.
You don't have the moment. Like, you can't share the moment.
Like, it was, do you know what? I've got the funniest memory, and it sounds so stupid to people, but it was like my first proper boyfriend. This was more than 15 years ago now. We went to London for the day. And you know, I'm guessing like London City, like the markets, it's going to be the same, like the Bronx markets, you know, you have the fake Gucci bags and stuff like that. So my boyfriend at the time, so they're good.
No, they have that. They have that here in the States, like fake FUBU back when I was a kid.
Wow, who remembers FUBU? But that's what I'm saying. So when you're broke like me, you get a fake Gucci purse. So he bought me one, and we went for some Chinese food, and the Chinese food was really bad. So I was bored, and I started to stuff the chicken inside the purse, my old purse, because I put my money and my wallet in my new purse. So my boyfriend at the time thought it would be really funny if we dropped it outside and saw if and waited for if someone would pick it up, and someone did. So we followed this person halfway around London, waiting for them to open it. And then they did, and we were just crying with laughter. Absolutely crying. Now, would it have been funny if I would have been vlogging the thing? Hi, guys, we're going through London now. This guy, we're following him. Ha ha.
Would
it have been funny, you know?
You would miss it.
But now, that's such a core memory for me. And whenever I reminisce about it, it's hilarious.
Yes. That is hilarious. That's crazy.
But it's so stupid.
No, but like, that's the thing though. But like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't have to be this brilliant eureka, like, you know, realization. Like, it could be literally anything.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this question. So was there a book or anything that you saw or read or maybe seen that helped you, like, kind of crystallizes like, or like encaptures like how you made this transition to who you are, or something that you read or saw?
So I'll be honest, though, I don't read. I have a really, really short attention span. So I'm more of I'll listen to documentaries in the background. So I listen to audiobooks, but I tend to zone out a lot, so it's really hard for me to focus. But I went through a phase of watching a psychologist on YouTube. He's called Psychology in Seattle. And he drops so many nuggets of information. It's just, and he's a clinical psychologist and a professor, so he's not your YouTube armchair psychologist.
Right.
He's qualified. And so, he just, yeah, so.
And what was the name? What was it, their name again, so everyone can
his name look is into it? His name is Dr. Kirk Honda, and his channel is Psychology in Seattle. So he reacts to reality TV show couples. So 90 Day Fiancé, okay. Love at First Sight. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
the trash TV. Yeah, I guess like that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But do you know what? He's so rational. He's so calm. And he allowed me to understand true narcissism. And I think that's a word we like throw around. This person's yes. a narcissist. But wow. He breaks it down on such a level where it's a clinical diagnosis. It's a clinical condition. People don't understand. It's a clinical, a medical issue, narcissism. It's not just something that people wear on their sleeve. And I'm a narcissist,
right?
You know? But he just dropped so many nuggets of information on relationships and navigating healthy relationships and what's the, you know, helpful ways to talk to each other. So I got quite a lot of insight from him.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. Did he watch F-Boy Island that was on HBO?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check in on with him because I watch the same. One thing about me, I will watch the same thing over and over again. So I tend to watch the same stuff from him over and over.
Have you heard of F-Boy Island?
No, but do you know what? I'm not a reality TV person.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
it was a story. It was a show. It was like a reality dating show where they had a bunch of self-proclaimed mascots and self-proclaimed like F-boys. And then they tried to see like who they ultimately pick at the end. And I was watching this with my girlfriend at the time. And I was, because I'm fascinated by like people. Like, so I was, my first major in college was psychology. And so as we were watching this, just everything that I've learned over my life, trying to, you know, be social and dating, all this other kind of stuff. Like, I was kind of like, all right, he's going to say this, and this is going to happen, and this and that and the third. And it was just like, and then it would just happen. Yeah. And so I'm just, so the psychology behind it, like, I'm fascinated, like, by all of that. So Hannah, I'm not going to take too much more of your time. So the theme of the show is the Forbidden Fruit Podcast, right? So it plays off the theme of Adam and Eve. When they ate the fruit, they instantly became knowledgeable of this thing. So what do you want? So essentially the episode is representative of that apple, and everyone is listening is biting into that apple. So what do you want people to then instantly realize from after they listen to this particular recording?
So I'm big on not giving advice or thinking I'm someone of authority and you should listen to me, but everybody is deserving of a chance, whatever that is. Just understand you have a chance. You're worthy. You're worthy of walking. You're worthy of eating well. Don't see anything as it's a burden. Doing your laundry, oh my gosh, I can't be bothered. I don't want to eat salad. Working out, oh my gosh. Just think of it as an ultimate privilege. Wow, you deserve a tidy place. You're so worthy of that. This salad, wow, it's so abundant in nutrients. You're worth that salad. Like, it's working out, it's hard, but wow, you're able, you're willing, you are worth it. So just count yourself in. Don't count yourself out.
I love that.
So
how do people find you? Are you promoting anything? Is it a thing you want to throw out to connect with other people?
So you can find me, my Instagram is AITCH. I think there's an underscore underneath. So it's what's my Instagram? It's AITCH.
Hold on, let me look it up.
TEA. Is it?
Hold on, let me see. I got AITCHTEA underscore.
Yeah, so that's a play on my initials. My initials are HT. The way you spell H is AITCH, and I like T. So, yep, I am, God willing, I will be studying dietetics maybe next year, and I'll absolutely be passing on any knowledge because I'm really passionate about healthcare, especially in the Black community as well. I do not want us to continue being statistics. We are not diabetes. We are not high blood pressure. I want to be part of the change. We are not our generation of ailments. I just want to help the masses. We're better than this.
That is huge, and that's fascinating that it's that way in other parts of the world. So I grew up in the South, and so all you have is like chitlins and pig feed and like all of the bad soul food, and it just becomes so normal to be, you know, out of shape and overweight and not working out. So I mean, it's fascinating to hear that that isn't experienced elsewhere.
Yeah. Because, and you know what it is? I think there's a really, and it's not that people are thinking this because they're stupid. No, it's because we're taught it as well, and that it runs in my family and this and that. It's not necessarily that high blood pressure runs in your family. It's just that the habit runs in your family. That's all. So although my mom may have not given us all the foods that she, even the types of foods that she ate when she was growing up, maybe it was a Western version, but maybe it still has the salt in it and that stuff. We are not destined for high blood pressure and diabetes. That's not our destiny. And I just want to, I'm hoping to get into schools. That's a whole new avenue down the road. But I want people in the community to get the knowledge that they deserve.
That is some very important work. And I know you're going to crush it when you find that avenue to get that accomplished.
Yes.
So thank you again for taking the time to chat with me. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I know I talk a lot, so I appreciate your patience.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. That's why we're here.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Hey, this is Nick Moore, your host. I understand that time is life, which is why I'm so grateful that you would take the time to listen to the Forbidden Fruit podcast. It's something that I don't take lightly. If you've enjoyed what you've heard so far, please share this with a friend. You can also show your support by downloading, following, or subscribing to the podcast, as well as leaving a review on Apple Podcast. Don't forget to turn on your notifications so you don't miss an episode. Find me on Instagram at podcast_fruit. I will love to hear from you. And like always, until then, be tempted.